Your message, when someone comes to your website, someone who's never seen you or heard of you before has been attracted there, you have 7 seconds to tell them that they're in the right place. 7 seconds to convince them that you're worth their time. And if you don't do that in 7 seconds, they're going to go away.
Welcome to the B2B Digital Marketer Podcast, a podcast helping you to end your struggle with digital marketing, helping you to pave a new and better path to target and capture your ideal customer. Each week, we teach you how insiders and experts debunk the dreary and become engines of innovation. Now, here's your host, Jim Rembach.
Okay, B2B DM gang. Hey, we're getting ready for a great discussion because, hey, I've already had a bit of a one because we have John Gumas on the show today. John, welcome.
Hi, Jim. Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Now, John has written a couple of books, and one of them actually just hit the bestseller list. And so by the time this is released, it'll already have been there. So you need to make sure you grab your copy. And it's Challenger Brand Marketing. And John, before we get into our topic, where we're going to talk about a lot of different things in association with strategy, related to go-to-market, marketing, messaging, all of those types of things. But if you could, tell the B2B DM gang just a little bit about your background.
Sure. Thanks, Jim. Well, I run a full-service branding advertising agency based out of San Francisco. Next year will be our 40th year. So I was 12 years old when I started the agency, just for the record. Company, thank God, has been very successful over the years, continues to be. We have a niche in a methodology that we've created, we branded, and we've trademarked called Challenger Brand Marketing. And Challenger Brand Marketing is a methodology, and Challenger brands are organizations of any size, any industry, that are going up against other competitors that have greater resources than they have. And resources are defined in many different ways. The most obvious is the most marketing dollars. That would be the most obvious. But it's also going against firms with a bigger sales force, more brand recognition, more, greater product lines, et cetera, et cetera. So the concept of Challenger Brand Marketing is, if you go head to head against any competitor that has greater resources, chances are you're not going to win that battle, or you're certainly not going to achieve the objectives that you want to achieve. So the concept is, if you can't outspend them, you have to outthink them, you have to outmaneuver them, you have to outmessage them. And that's what Challenger Brand Marketing is all about. And there's a very, very specific system and methodology that we use to get our clients to the point where they're actually overperforming and delivering the maximum results they can for the resources that they have to spend.
You know, as you're explaining that, I mean, to me, there's just a lot of loaded components in all of that. I think it's too easy for us to look at the proliferation. You can easily say the overloading and over providing of social media information, insights. And I think, you even talked about, the whole case study, how that's not going to sell your product. And so we're going to get into that to somewhat, but I think mindset is critically important here when we start talking about approach. Oftentimes we talk about David and Goliath, we talk about leveling the playing field. But when we only rely on what we know and what we see, it's going to send us off into the wrong path, which ultimately will get us that head-to-head issue that you say we need to avoid. So what are the different mindsets, and you kind of hit on them a little bit, that you can elaborate on that people need to have in order to make sure that they're not having that head-to-head, clash? Because it's like you said, there's no way they could do it.
Yeah, you're so right. And we'll get into it in a moment, but we use 5 steps to the process, the Challenger Brand process, to get our clients to market efficiently, effectively, and successfully. But the thing that we see And I don't want to say mistake because that sounds so degrading, but that what we see happening is there's this phenomena that occurs when a company, you know, you live it, you breathe it, you're in your company, you know it so well. I mean, so well, it's literally impossible to step outside of that and look at your company from the outside in as a prospective new customer would. So as a result, you make these assumptions, right? You assume you know what that audience needs to hear you say. You assume you know where your message needs to be. You assume all of these things. And what happens is when we go through our process, I'm not going to say 99% of the time, I'm going to go on a limb and say 100% of the time, what our clients think their audience needs to hear them say is not what their audience needs to hear. They're completely different. Sometimes they're off by just a little bit. But as you know, in marketing, if you're off just a little bit, it's a big deal. So this assumption that you really think you know, based on kind of what happens naturally, because you know your company so well, that assumption forces or creates companies going down this path that is usually the wrong path and doesn't deliver the results that they're hoping for because of that disconnect. So the first thing that we do is work to get our clients aligned with their prospects in terms of the message, because it's not always about the tactical delivery, right? You're right. Social media and all these other options you have, there's literally now hundreds and hundreds of options. And we believe that it doesn't matter how much money you spend, it doesn't matter what options you choose out there in terms of tactical options. If you're not saying the right thing to the right people, it's just not going to work as well as you want. So most companies don't take the time to start at the most basics and really figure out exactly who they are, what their niche is, what their position is, what their messaging is. And from that, everything works better. Once you figure that out and learn the right messaging, the words, and how you differentiate from your competitors, that's when the choir starts to sing, right? In terms of marketing and results.
You know, as you're talking, I start thinking about just a conversation that I had not even hours ago, via email, where a CMO, as he was talking about some of the things that you're referring to, in his communication, he kept saying, I. And I'm like, I think we got an issue here.
It's so funny you should say that. I drive the folks in my company crazy because there is no I, it's we. You know, everything is we or our. This is a team. And that's how companies really need to look at it, because, you know, you never want to be that focus group of one. And that's what tends to happen. It's very normal for us humans to do that, right? It's here's what I think, therefore, that's what the world thinks, therefore, that's what my customers think, my prospects think. And, that it's a very natural thing to happen. But it can take you down a path that you don't want to go.
So we have to do some bias breaking. That's what you're saying here. And also, There's a big transition between founder-led organizations. And that's when you look at the research, is one of the problems when they start getting into their growth phase, right? So in other words, I sold to a few people who I was already familiar with and who knew me. And then therefore, hey, you know, let's take this and systemize it. And now let's get into growth phase. And that just doesn't work.
Yeah, you're right. And that's I think where you fall into this this false self-confidence you think what you're saying is right. But if they know you, or if they know you, they're buying you, right? They're investing in you. You need to shift that to them investing in your brand, investing in your product, investing in the concept of what you're offering versus you as the individual. And you're right, that's many times that's difficult for founders to make that transition. And most of the time they can't, unless they bring in, you know, outside help to help them, you know, assist them to do that.
Well, and definitely them needing to be vulnerable, listen, you know, and actually make the transformation, other than saying, no, this is my way and we're going to actually, take this particular approach. Now, I would dare to say, you talked about that 100% success rate, right? I would dare to say you're probably walking away from certain opportunities because of that, aren't you?
Oh, absolutely. And especially when it comes to challenger brand marketing, you have to come to grips that you are a challenger brand. And most companies are. And here's the thing. Pepsi is a challenger brand to Coke, right? Avis is a challenger brand to Hertz. You know, the list goes on and on of companies that are challenger brands and probably don't realize it. And so all that means is it just means you should take a slightly different approach to your marketing. And the approach we take is we have this concept that challenger brands should operate in a world where you believe you get one shot at success. You get one shot, so you better not screw up, right? You better be right. And what I mean by that is you need to do your homework to make sure that you are, you know, you're talking to the right people, you understand your competitors, you understand the marketplace, you understand what makes you unique. You're looking at carving out a niche that you can own and you can defend from anybody. So that's the process. And I talked about our five-step process to get them to go to market. The first step of that five-step process is probably, in my opinion, the most important step any company will ever go through in their marketing life. And that's what we refer to as discovery. Okay, that's where what we do in our discovery, and it's truly discovery because we're trying to understand and learn the truth, the real reason behind this company, why they exist, why their customers like them. So we interview, literally, we interview people one-on-one, and we'll interview, when I say people, I'll say we start out with their customers, and we interview them on the telephone. And the reason I'm saying telephone is because that's a critical component. When, like right now, we're on a Zoom call, Jim, you're looking at me, I'm looking at you. If I ask you a question, there's going to be a certain level of intimidation that you're going to answer me either what you think I want to hear or the easy answer. That is the worst thing you can do, right? Or you as the customer, right? That's the worst thing you can do because now you're going to take me on a path that's not true. So what we do is we interview customers on the telephone and very quick interviews, maybe 20 minutes, and we ask very unique questions. So we're not asking, you know, which product do you like? Do you like the deluxe product or the basic product? You know what? We're not asking those products. We're creating emotional conversations because emotion is where the truth comes out. So we're asking them questions that really help us understand why they bought the product. And these are customers. Why did you buy it? What were the actual words that we said to you or the words that got you motivated to buy? So we're asking very unique questions. They're not your typical questions. Designed to pull that out. So we'll interview in the discovery phase, we'll interview customers and get their side of the story. Then we'll take those same questions and we'll interview what we call internal stakeholders, our customers, you know, the CEO on down to the CMO and other people in between that we feel are relevant to this. We'll ask them the same questions. And this is where my 100% comes in. 100% of the time, what our customers think is not what their customers think. And it's a phenomenon that happens. And sometimes they're off a little bit, sometimes they're off a bunch. And also, not only are they not aligned with their customers, they're not aligned internally. So even internally, along, you know, the CEO, the founder, on down to the CMO and folks in between, they're not even aligned in what they think the company really, you know, what the essence is. So that's the first part of the discovery is the internal and the external interviews. Then we add a third part to that is that it, then we do a very extensive competitive analysis where we're looking at their top competitors to get an understanding of what's their position, what's their true message, what are they saying, is there a weakness there, is there a niche that we could move in and own. And so those are the three components that we look at when we do our discovery. So from those three components, all of that data, we move into step two, which is that's where we develop the strategy and the messaging. So if we do the discovery right, the strategy and the messaging pretty much create themselves because it becomes so obvious. It's so obvious. But now you're creating those key elements, right? Strategy and messaging based on facts, not based on, I think this is what we should say. I think this is what my customers need to know. I think this is what our brand stands for. So you're creating it on fact. And the other thing about when you're creating messaging and strategy, essentially that's your brand, right? Your brand comes out of this. What you don't want to do is create a brand that you can't live up to. So the brand is essentially it lives inside of these companies. You know, our job is to pull it out. So this pulls out the brand and creates all the messaging to where they can truly live up to the brand. So that's the second step. So now we have the messaging in place. We have the strategy in place based on the facts that we uncovered. Now from there, we're developing the creative, right? What are the visuals? What does the website look like? What do the sales materials look like for the sales team? What does the digital marketing need to look like and feel? And what's the image that it needs to provoke? And so from that, I mean, just a little side note, on a website, we believe in what we call the 7-second rule, right? Your message, when someone comes to your website, someone who's never seen you or heard of you before has been attracted there, you have 7 seconds to tell them that they're in the right place. 7 seconds to convince them that you're worth their time. And if you don't do that in 7 seconds, they're going to go away. So your message, you know, when it comes to developing the message, you don't have a lot of time. You don't. You have a very, very short time to tell them what they need to hear. And essentially, you need to tell them what you do, right? Who you are, what you do, what makes you special. In other words, what makes you unique from your competitors? And the big question, the last question is, what's in it for them? So those four questions are kind of the core of the messaging. But that messaging core is based on what the learnings. Right, so now we're at step three, the creative. We've developed the creative. It's exactly how it needs to look based on the positioning and the messaging. Now we're ready for the go-to market plan, right? Go-to market. Okay, where do we place this message to, in our opinion, surround the prospect? So the strategy actually and all, it really helps us develop the messaging, because you can easily be in a vertical, right? Whether it's like TikTok or something that doesn't relate to your brand, or doesn't connect your brand, or there's a disconnect to your brand, and you don't want to be there. You know, you don't want to do that. So where you advertise is sometimes just as important as what you say. And the fifth and final step, which is pretty much an ongoing step because we manage these campaigns, we manage these programs, is the ongoing hourly, daily, weekly, monthly analysis and optimization, so you can adjust and get better and better and better and increase the results more and more and more. And so that's that in a really fast way. And I may have been speaking too fast, so forgive me for that. But you know, that's the process. That's the Challenger brand process. And what it does, it delivers results, and it delivers results that you can count on.
And it doesn't happen quick, right? Too, this isn't static. As you're talking, I'm like, well, you know, marketplaces change, competitive landscapes change, you know, social conditions change, buyer, you know, behavior changes. And I think one of the things that you talk about is targeting the heart of the millennial buyer. You know, when you start talking about the entire way that we used to do some of these things, it's been flipped over. And, you know, COVID caused a lot of different implications, impacts and conditions and constraints in a lot of different ways. And one of them being is that we don't have the same buyer that we used to have. We have more, you know, decision-making teams than we have. And so how have you kind of modified those five steps based on those conditions?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And so let's look at it in two pieces. Right. The second piece, I'm going to say that first. The second piece is the deliverables, right? The tactical stuff. How do you find that buyer? How do you get that message to the buyer? That has changed dramatically, right? There are so many options now. There's so many new things coming out there. You know, now you've got AI throwing a loop into everything and all of that is constantly changing. But the one thing that remains pretty stable is the essence of who you are. the essence of your brand, who your company is, your core message, right? That stays the same. Unless you completely change who your company is, unless you and I completely change our personalities, we're never, you know, we are who we are. You know, for the most part, that's the same for a company. So a company needs to really embrace that and understand who they are, because that's why people do business with them. But with that said, you talk about now the millennial buyer, and there's a phenomenon that we're seeing out there. And it's this concept of all of us, and I'm going to throw us into the millennials because we're similar to this, is none of us want to be sold to, all right? The hard sell, when you're aggressively selling, what tends to happen is the moment you do that is the moment the person on the other side that you're speaking to kind of steps back and goes, oh, wait a minute, Jim, I don't know if I believe you. You're making me uncomfortable. Your credibility starts to wane a little bit. So the new form of marketing now is this concept of selling without selling. How do you sell without selling? And it's this, you know, this idea of being a thought leader. You know, what is it about your company? What is it about your product or service that is so unique that nobody else really can compete against? You know, and we like to take advantage of that and create our clients as thought leaders in those niche categories. As now they'll get attention, now they'll get noticed, and now they'll start generating credibility and believability in the marketplace. So all of a sudden they will start to find that their social media campaigns, their digital marketing campaigns, their traditional marketing campaigns, their trade show activity, their sales teams, all start to generate more and more results because of that type of selling versus kind of the traditional type of selling that, hey, come on, buy something, I'll give you a great deal or whatever it is. You know, it's just, that is waning, that is going away, and it's being taken over by this concept of selling without selling.
Okay, so now this gets into this whole, let's call it a red ocean situation. You even hit on AI a little bit. I was chatting with someone the other day and said for one of their particular product lines, for one of their particular, you know, go-to-market, you know, target areas and industries, they were generating 10 AI blog generated or created blog posts every single day. I mean, at what point do we say, you know, everybody's trying to be a thought leader. Everybody's trying to, challenge the oracles of the world and the sales forces of the world and so on and so forth. At what point, you know, do I get into the exact same scenario that you're talking about we want to avoid? They're making noise, we're making noise.
Yeah, and that's where I would argue with you. That's if that's where your message is critical, right? I'll go back to our steps one and two of the process. That's why it's so important to go through that, because what you're going to find out is the message that is unique to you, the message that only you can say, the message that is unique only to your organization. Because if you're not saying something that is relevant to the person you're speaking to, what's going to happen is exactly what you just described. You're going to be, remember Charlie Brown and his teacher, you know, wah, wah, wah. That's what you are going to become to the audience. So that's, you know, we see this all the time. Companies believe their first step in marketing is get out there and start doing stuff. But we would argue the first thing to do is you have to figure out what makes you unique and what messaging you need to use so you can break through the clutter. So you are unique. You are a true thought leader in a way that, you know, no one else is. That's the thing. And it's really hard to do that. It's very difficult for a company to do that. That's why we come in and do that for them. But you have to do that. And until you really discover that message, that position, that core, that essence of who you are, unique to your competitors, yet relevant to your audience, until you discover that, I don't care how much money you spend. I don't care how many channels you use. I don't care what you do. You are never going to achieve the ROI, the success that you're capable of, because you are doing exactly what you just described, right? You're kind of feeding that frenzy. You're just another white sheep in the field. And you do not want to do that because that's an expensive proposition. And, you know, you really, it takes you months, if not a year, to figure out, well, that's just not working. Well, and that's a long time and you've spent a lot of money and you've gone down a path you don't want to go down. That's why the discovery process that we go through is so critical. And I said at the beginning, probably the most important thing that a company will ever do, because you will figure that out and you will break through all that clutter that you just described.
Okay. You know, I'm going to go back and dig into the discovery phase a little bit, because there was something that was shared with me that we've actually even implemented in some of the questions that we utilize here. And because it's not that we're trying to gather a testimonial. Also, we talked about bias breaking. One of the bias that can exist is these people are already customers or clients, right? So they're going to have a certain bias associated with that. And one of the questions that we implemented was a question that basically goes around that whole decision making process, to say, okay, if you had to do it all over again before you purchased, you know, this company's, you know, product or service, what would cause you not to buy?
You know, it's yes. And that's one of the questions. We frame it in a different way. Because we frame our questions, because we're trying to get the folks we're speaking to, we're trying to get them comfortable. We're trying to get them feel at ease so they can tell us the truth. So we'll frame it in a way, like, for example, if you had a magic wand and you can go back in time and create the perfect product, the perfect scenario, what would it be? And then we build upon that question ultimately. So what was it about our client's product that got you to buy it? What was it? What were the words? What were the emotions? That's how we build it from there. Because until you get that person feeling comfortable, when you're interviewing, feeling comfortable and loose, right? They're not going to give you that insight. But you're right. That question you just described is one that we look at as well. We just use a different way of asking it. And then the questions then proceed from there. And there are a lot of, you know, word association questions, things like that, that really try to get us to understand that person. And then what happens after we do, and you don't have to do more than, for us, it's, you know, you might have 10 to 20 customers, really is all we need to statistically get what we need. You see trends, you start to see real obvious trends. And then once we get the trends, then we'll go back and make sure that those are correct. But they always are. They always are. And so if you can get those buzzwords that need to be put into, you know, everything from the elevator pitch, which is the biggest form of messaging in our opinion, all the way down to the tagline, which is the shortest form. Then you have positioning statements and vision statements and, you know, on and on and on, statements that are used in different applications. But you know, that's how we pull that out. That's how we get that. But you're absolutely right. That is what you want.
So we're talking about a transformational process and approach. And I'm starting to think about timelines. So if I'm sitting here and I'm an organization that needs to do this type of work, how long can I expect to start seeing some benefit in return? Because oftentimes, especially depending on the type of organization, they're trying to hit these sales targets. And it's like, hey, if I'm not filling my sales pipeline, if I'm not sitting there and we're not converting, I got a problem.
Yeah, you're right. That's every company we work with. So you don't stop what you're doing to go through this. You continue doing what you're doing. But so give you a sense of timing. Of this five-step process, steps one and two, right? The discovery, or you're interviewing, doing all that, getting all the data. So where you've developed the strategy and the messaging, you're ready to go. That whole process is roughly 6 to 8-ish weeks, right? So not that long. And then about another 4 weeks to develop the creative and the final details of the go-to market. So within about 90 days, they are, depending on how much change, how much adjustment needs to be made, but roughly 90 days they're green light to go. But it doesn't mean it's most of the time simultaneously we're helping them just keep going, you know, keep doing what they're currently doing, so the pipeline keeps is active.
Okay, so insight capture is something that I see for this, and we kind of hit on this a little bit, is something that has to be ongoing and continuous because of all of these shifts and changes and volatility and uncertainty, complexity, ambiguity, all of those types of things. And what I oftentimes find is that organizations don't feed back into that model. So while they may do a good job of front-ending and getting prospects and clients and customers and all going through that particular process, we have this client success or customer success component, customer service component that's not feeding insight back into the model and the framework. You know, how do you prevent those things?
Yeah, you're right, and that happens. So first of all, there, what we like to do is we like to think of three target audiences. Okay, we've been talking about the acquisition market right now. That's what we've been focusing on. New clients, how do you get them? What do you do? We take just as seriously a second audience, and that's what we call retention, the retention audience. How do you get folks who are currently your customers not to leave or buy more? And how do you get those in your pipeline to move further along the pipeline? So we look at that as a completely separate campaign, a completely separate approach. And then we have a third one. I'm just going to throw it out there just for the heck of it, because most companies never think of this. And it's we refer to as internal target. So how do you make sure everyone in your organization, right, from the, I was going to say receptionist, but nobody has receptionists anymore, but it makes my point. You know, the your basic employee through to your sales team, which is a critical component, because I can't tell you how many times sales teams are disconnected from marketing teams. How do you keep them informed as to what the company's position is, what their messaging is, what their strategies are, how they should be selling? So how do you keep them engaged and knowledgeable about this? Because everyone in the company could be saying the same thing the exact same way. If someone says, so Jim, tell me what your company does. Everyone in your organization should answer that question the same way. And if they don't, then you have some work to do. But that's what, you know, we work at. This whole process really is designed to do that, pull everybody in and get them involved. But that's the first step in making that happen, is you just get everybody involved and you target them in a campaign where they're constantly being educated and informed. They're up to date, so they always know what's going on. And unless you target them specifically, it's not going to happen.
That makes sense. So when I start looking at value and value propositions and all of that, I start going back and thinking about my prospects, my customers, my clients. And ultimately, when you start looking at what they can handle and the things that get their attention, I have to have very clear and I should say frequent, you know, information and research on what's their top of mind. So, because top of mind, a quote that I heard is top of mind drives our bottom line. And have you seen situations that you've worked with particular organizations to where you've been able to focus more on that prospect's top of mind issues and challenges and situations, and then actually impacted the sales? Because oftentimes it's not a direct line, because prospects don't see it, especially when you start getting into very complex solutions. They may be jumping three or four steps down away from the real problem, but that's their top of mind.
Yeah, yes, is the answer to that. Actually, a big fat yes would be the more appropriate answer. That's critical, right? That's really critical. And I'm going to jump into tactical things now, but we're big fans of search strategy. So we find that prospects that find our clients, prospects that believe they found our clients through some sort of search effort, become our clients' best clients. So it comes back to this credibility and believability, right? I'm searching. I have a specific need, to your exact point. I have a specific need, a challenge, a problem. I'm going to go out and search. I'm going to search to see who has a solution. So what we spend a lot of time in our go-to market plans and our strategies, we spend a lot of time understanding and figuring out what those problems are and how our clients' prospects may form that question online to search for an answer. So then we create, a lot of what we do is we'll create search targeted content. In other words, content designed to be found when they're searching for those queries. And we'll do this in a multitude of ways. And most people think of Google and Bing and, you know, those kind of search engines. But you know, YouTube and other video forms. In fact, YouTube is the second most used search engine now behind Google. So we'll get into every type of search we possibly can to make sure that our clients are being found when these searches occur. And many times these searches are very specific because we always can't afford, or our clients can't afford, to be in the most general of searches, because those are just being dominated by the gorillas. And so let's not even try, but we can get be found and get at the highest of the rankings for very, very specific searches that we find we get greater results, and actually we find we get better clients because they are serious, because their search is very, very specific.
Well, and when you're talking about that, I started thinking about, you know, if you look at the whole target marketplace, you start talking about they're unaware, they're problem aware, then they're, you know, product solution aware, and then they're product aware. If you start looking at that, the studies have shown, you know, as little as 1% of organizations are actually in market, you know, for your product and service. I've seen the numbers go as high as 7, but I've never seen anybody have any type of report that shows, you know, that your target market, you know, has more than, you know, 7% in it. So how do we, when we start thinking about long-term pipeline building, nurturing, and all of that, address the other 93%?
Yeah, I believe that, you know who your target audience is. You know, most companies, in fact, if you don't, then you're in trouble. You know who your audience is. The one thing you don't know is when they're ready to buy. Okay, that's the key, right? That's the key. You just don't know when they're ready to buy. So we believe, and our strategies focus around this idea of surrounding your prospect, always being there for when they're ready to buy. Now, very important point, not all companies, in fact, all challenger brands, you typically cannot afford to be in front of everybody all the time. So if that audience is this big, I'm holding my arms out wide, you narrow that down, right? So what can you afford to effectively be? Who are your primaries that you always want to be around? Because when they're ready to buy, you've got to be there. And that's also why we're big fans of this search generating content strategy, this thought leadership content strategy, because you are always there. If you create the right content and you optimize it correctly and you have the right target audiences, you connect those, you are always there for when they're ready to buy, when they start their process. So it's critical.
We also talked hit on it a little bit in regards to brand recognition, brand building. And when you start looking at what has happened in today's world, and we kind of hit on this a little bit as far as the buyer kind of stepping back and saying, whoa, when we get a little bit of aggressive, they're also doing that when we come out with certain pieces of information that has our brand on it, because they know it's biased. It's like, oh, that's going to be self-serving material. I'm not spending any time on that. So how do you prevent that from occurring?
Yeah, you know, and that really is literally case by case. Some, you know, depending on the product service that is being sold. We do a lot of, you know, work in the medical device industry, and you're right. You know, there's papers or studies that come out, and, you know, the first thing that a prospect will say, well, wait a minute, you sponsored that study, or you know, so you're right. And it's a fine line, and it's a dance, and it comes down to how you articulate things, right? But at the end of the day, sometimes your name on something, which you can't avoid, starts the conversation. So we believe, and we tell our clients this all the time, is marketing is a concept of starting a conversation. So if you look at your messaging, you look at your strategies, you look at your tactics with this idea, with this call to action, with this objective of starting a conversation, Because most clients in high tech, most clients in medical, most clients in high ticket areas, it's you're never going to get somebody that's going to call them and say, "Hey, that sounds great. I'll take two of them." You know, that's not how it happens, but that's how most of the selling occurs, as if that's what you want to have happen. But if you shift your mindset, you shift your strategy, your messaging strategy, to where all you're trying to do is start a conversation, that's different. That's different, and it adjusts everything. And your point, that's how we get around that. That's how we get our clients started with conversations. Because, you know, sales and marketing are very different, right? Sales is this concept of where you contact the prospect and say, "Would you like to buy from me?" Marketing, in our opinion, is a process of where the prospect contacts you and says, "I'm interested in buying from you." Okay. That's the difference. And that, so you have to understand that. So it's this idea of starting the conversation. So marketing pulls in, starts the conversation, to where sales then, you know, engages the conversation and tries to close. And if you look at it from that perspective, then everything tends to shift in terms of what you do and how you do it. The thought leadership concept, the search concept, earned media concept is something we do a lot of, because that's the credibility, right? I saw you, Jim. I read you, Jim. I saw you on this podcast, Jim. I saw you speaking at this trade show, Jim. What you had to say was great, because you weren't selling me anything. You sound like a really smart guy that knows his stuff, and wow, okay, I want to talk to you. You just started the conversation. That's a really different approach, right? Than the hard sell, the, you know, moving hard on a product or service.
Okay, so you said it at the beginning, and we've kind of hit it in several instances in regards to thinking different, being more creative in your thinking, being innovative, and you know, having that little bit of an extra edge. I start thinking about what's coming, right? You talked about we're starting to see some of these things happen. You know, what does a B2B digital marketer or marketer need to be thinking about for 2024 and actually start taking actions for it, or even beyond?
Yeah, I think the first thing you have to ask yourself, and truly, truly, honestly ask yourself, do I really know what my audience needs to hear me say? Do I know why they're buying from me? Or do I think I know why they're buying from me? Do I know what makes me different from my competitors? Do I truly know, in the eyes of my prospects, what makes me different? Or do I think I know? So ask yourselves these key questions. And if you're starting with "I think," then I would challenge that you have a little work to do, and the little work you put into that to change the "I think" to "I know," "I think I need to say this" to "I know I need to say this," that to me is the biggest adjustment they can make moving forward, because everything they do is going to be that much more effective. Their salespeople, all of a sudden, or what they say, is going to be that much more effective, because they're saying what the audience needs to hear. And once you learn what your audience, your specific audience, needs to hear you say, that's when success comes. It's not going to be spending more money. It's not going to be trying new things. That's the first step. Because once you get that down and you know it for sure, everything happens. Your brand starts to build, your sales start to build, everything starts to align.
John Gumas, awesome conversation today. How does the B2B DM gang get in touch with you?
Well, they can go to our website. It's gumas.com, G-U-M-A-S.com. There's a lot of great resources there. They can actually download our first book for free, which is called Challenger Brand Marketing. It's they can download it, or they can purchase our new book, that just came out. And if they have a specific question, I'm happy to answer it. They can email me at jgumas@gumas.com, jgumas@gumas.com, and just tell them that I was on your show, and I'll be happy to answer any question, specific question they might have to their company.
John Gumas, thank you for sharing your knowledge and wisdom, and we wish you the very best.
Thank you for joining us. Go now to join the B2B DM gang in the B2B Marketer LinkedIn group. where you can connect with other B2B DM disruptors and get access to our B2B DM cheat sheets, checklist, and guides. While you're at it, if you found value in this show, please help by going to iTunes to rate, review, and subscribe. And share the show on all of your digital platforms. Be sure to tune in next week for our next episode. And always remember, you can automate your lead capture, but you must lure your lead.